So now we're sitting in the public space here at the Congress Hall in the middle of Berlin, just off of Alexanderplatz. It's cold outside, so I'm sitting here with Rob Gongrip.
Hello there.
And let's just start. Let's start. You gave the keynote here at the Chaos Computer Congress. What was that? What was that about?
I guess mostly I was trying to make sense of it all, which is, of course, a really big ambition. Going a little bit into what this community means, how this is all relevant, cover some things that have happened to me in the past year, which have some cut over with some of the really big things that have happened in the world over the past year. I've had a bit of an involvement with WikiLeaks earlier in the year as I helped release the collateral murder video, the Iraqi helicopter video. So I was a little bit involved in that story, and I've done some other relatively interesting things, or at least to me interesting things, regarding electronic voting in Brazil and in India. So I was more or less telling a personal story, and I was sort of going back to a speech that Frank Rieger and myself did here in 2005 called We Lost the War, which was a very pessimistic story. This was also a time that I wasn't so well in my life, but it was a very pessimistic story about how this whole privacy thing was going to hell and how all these issues we cared about were basically not making any progress on them. Life is only going to get worse, yada, yada. And I went back on that, and I sort of spoke about how we hadn't lost the war, apparently, because we're all still here and we're fighting the same issues. And we're even making progress on some and going backwards on others. And trying to impression on people how chaotic the world is going to be the next 20 or 30 years, which the world is going to be pretty chaotic. We're rapidly running out of all sorts of resources, from fossil fuels, all kinds of minerals, fresh water. At the same time, speed of transactions is increasing. We don't really understand our economic system anymore. We're facing potentially even catastrophic climate change. All of this is going to come to a head in the next, 30 years, 40 years, tops? And then there's power shift, political power shift, China becoming more powerful, the U.S. becoming less powerful. So all of this is happening over the same period. And so the world is going to be very, very messy at the very least. And I was trying to impress that on people as well. Like, what is the role of our community in this increasingly messy world? Where do we stand? And all of that sort of came together, I guess.
Okay, and here's a question. One of the talks this morning was looking at how, let's say, industry and state try to create their 30-year plans for implementation. And one of the problems with that is they're drafting out plans to deal with data in the next 30 years. How is that not going to work? I mean, there's a talk that Seda Gosis did, and that basically what you're talking about is we're looking forward to more chaos, right?
I'm not sure we're looking forward to it. There's definitely aspects of chaos that I am not looking forward to. But we do understand chaos a lot better than most people. We are a little bit more versed in dealing with a world that faces rapid changes, and we're a little bit more versed in figuring out what the dependencies are, how the systems really work, not how industry says they work. We're a little bit closer to the real world of how hairy this all is. And hence we have some kind of, we have an understanding that can help. We can explain things maybe a little bit better than industry spokespeople or politicians, sometimes, for some issues. And I guess that's our role. That doesn't mean we look forward to chaos. It doesn't mean we cause chaos. But we can be guides for some particular kinds of chaos.
Okay, good. I mean, but what I mean by looking forward is that the world in general is not going according to plan, and there are certain people or mindsets that can deal with that better than others. Would you say that?
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay.
And this mindset, I mean, a lot of these people are like taking apart structures, like figuring out how they work, are fairly smart, independently minded, don't necessarily go along with whatever larger corporate or government interests think is the proper way to say or the proper way to think. So I guess those things together.
OK. Okay. So, and what do you, what, when you say our community, could you just say what you mean with that, even though I think I know, but...
I guess in Europe especially, hackers of all creeds have... are sort of coming together on a common set of ideals.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what are those ideals?
What are those ideals? The right to find out how stuff works, the right to take your own things apart, the right to privacy, and helping people understand what's going on. So helping people understand developments that nobody else is going to tell them. Transparency, I guess those ideas.
Yeah.
And it's a connected set of ideals, and it's a set of ideals that has friends, it has enemies. It's in that sense, it's a true movement.
And I would say, like, in a way, understanding that information is political, that you can engage with it, that you can operate it, you can, in a way, taking this DIY approach and saying that, like, information, media, technology, these are things that the public or, you know, people can engage with. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. because, okay, that's because with this community, and then, one of the things is, because I know you for a long time, and you've been engaged not just with technology, but always with the politics of information. Okay, and then, I mean, we were just talking, okay, when was your first radio station?
I built a transmitter, and we did a radio station. Not so much talk, more music, but we did talk between the songs. That was when I was 11, just because I wanted to build a transmitter and see if it worked.
And it worked.
And it worked. We broadcast on at least 5 frequencies simultaneously, not all intended.
That's great. But I think, okay, so you have a long-term involvement with media and technology and doing stuff yourself. What came after the radio station?
What came after the radio station? I guess computers. I guess the first home computers. My father bought me a ZX81. Which is a tiny little Sinclair computer from England. And learning to program and finding out about computers. And then soon after, finding out about networks. Because my father had a modem to send his articles. He had another little computer that he got from his newspaper. So my father was a journalist. And finding out what you could do with that modem.
I mean, I'm not sure how this relates, but you've also, because you've been working with media for a long time, and let's talk like mid-90s with Access for All, you also had, you know, problems with the Fishman documents, Scientologists. So I would say that information, in spite, like out before, pre-9/11, pre-war conflict zones, there have always been battles around information. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to say anything more on that? But because you stay in there, but more people come in, so what's the drive? What's the drive for new people coming in? Because there's a, let's say, a kind of small set, it gets bigger and bigger, but what do you think makes...
I think new people are there. This community, if I take Congress, if I take this German, mostly German, but European community of hackers, the drives are wildly different. There's people here that are into it for some kind of technological reason. They need friends to do some type of technological project that they couldn't otherwise do. There's people here for purely political reasons that are not even technical or don't deeply understand the technology, and there's everything in between. So the drives vary wildly, I think. There's not one drive for these people. I guess I operate on sort of the crossroads. I have always been both a technology and a politically motivated person. I've sort of been the bridge between these worlds more than anything else. I'm not the world's deepest programmer, but I do understand more than people that are not into computers. I'm sort of the bridge between everything. And lots of other people are. I'm not the only one, but this is sort of my role in this community, and the role of a number of other people is to sort of bridge these things together.
Okay, and then, because, I mean, you just said something before we started recording about everything that came after the 80s had to be better and the way that media was controlled. Can you say something along those lines again and what you meant?
Well, this came after you said that everything we said in the 90s about how the internet would suck was true. and I just disagreed. Because if I take the internet and if I look at what the possibilities are, in parallel to all the bad developments and in parallel to everything that's going on that we may disagree with, the niche, the space for independent thought, for opposition, for is so much greater than during any previous time. Compared to having to do pirate radio to get your ideas out, or compared to stenciling and getting your stencils passed out at alternative bookstores, this so rocks.
Okay, then let's go. Now let's zoom fast forward. Okay, this rocks, but what about surveillance? What about like things like post-privacy? What about all of these topics that come up? What about having like WikiLeaks, having your DNS shut down?
What about them? That's all bad.
Yeah. Okay. That's all bad, but like, what is that the next challenge? Is like preserving some space for information? Do you see it, like, you don't see it so gloomy? You seem quite positive compared to 5 years ago, so.
Well, I would be quite positive compared to 5 years ago, because 5 years ago I was really fucking pissed off and depressed and felt things were going very, very, very badly only. And I think still some things are still going very, very badly, and I think the world still is going to be a very big mess. Mm-hmm. But I just see positive and negative developments, mm-hmm. I guess. There's opportunities for freedom. There's going to be new opportunities for freedom. There's opportunities for repression. There's going to be people expanding the opportunities of freedom. There's going to be authoritative assholes expanding repression, and there's the struggle will continue.
Mm-hmm. But you see it in sort of the terms that there will be enough people struggling, and let's say on the behalf of some kind of greater good, that continues.
Well, the understanding of the issues that we face here is growing. Mm-hmm. There's never again going to be a time where such a small fraction of people only understood the issues, mm-hmm. as in, say, the 90s. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be ever again in the information age. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a few thousand people all over Europe that really understand what's going on. That bottleneck has been passed. Mm-hmm. To now introduce great repression is not going to be any easier than any other kind of repression. The digital world is not this exception to the rule. It's mm-hmm. no longer this strange island in a different reality.
Okay.
It's part of reality. And it has tons of people inhabiting it, and these people would get angry in the same way that they would get angry over other things. Mm-hmm. Another thing I mentioned in my opening speech, which is really a tangent for this community at least, I mentioned how many people are on antidepressants. And the staggering number of people that are on Prozac, Zoloft, and all these other long-term mood-altering drugs. And how I feel, even though I've done no studies or there's really little empirical data, but just my gut feeling says that there's something really big going on there, that you can't mood change that many people and not expect effects that transcend the individual. Mm-hmm. There's everybody's worried about the long-term effects of these drugs and what they do to the drinking water and the fish population, God knows what, but the intended effect of making people more happy and the damage that might do to all of society. And I'm not saying these individuals don't have the right to make themselves happy, but if you kill your reservoir of unhappy people that are fucking pissed off and now it's fucking over and we're going to do something about it, if you kill this reservoir or sufficiently empty this reservoir, you're going to not have change. Depression in the individual is well understood to force change that would be short-term, very costly and painful. Depression forces change that's going to make you miserable for a year. A divorce, a change of job, whatever. And now, how can we think that this effect somehow stops at the individual? That this effect doesn't exist for all of us? That if we medicate the smart, unhappy people, because smart people have access to healthcare and they go to the doctor sooner and they don't get sent home with have a couple of nice nights of sleep. So if you medicate the smart, unhappy people that would otherwise be freaking fed up and do something about it, you're going to not have change. And this may well, just gut feeling, no science, this may well have killed society's capacity to fix itself. So that was sort of a tangent I went off on. I'm not sure why I said this. Why did I go off on this rant? Well, it was a beautiful rant.
I love the rant because this is something where, like, I mean, Dimitri Kleiner talks about this. Zeta Grosso talks about this, that, like, the need for a compelling case for people to get engaged. And actually, if people are not angry, they're not going to do anything. If they're...
No.
I'm all for this.
Change is brought about by unhappy people.
Yeah. So basically, we need to embrace the unhappiness in order to find the struggle to fulfill something that could be happy or just better or to be alive.
Well, when I was unhappy in 2005, and I wasn't clinically depressed ever, I was not in bed for weeks, I was not in any way contemplating suicide, none of the clinical depression signs. But I was just unhappy, and I was going on about how unhappy I was, how grumpy I was, and people noticed this.
Yeah.
And my friends started sending me to the doctor. Go see the doctor. There's pills, you know. You can be happy. This, as soon as something can be medicated, the condition that is to be medicated loses its approval by society to be around. People don't like to deal with an affliction, with a disease, with anything. And as soon as it can be fixed, you are put under a moral obligation to actually fix it. And this is definitely happening because I saw, just anecdotally for me, I saw people coming to me saying, dude, you need to fix this. You need to go to a doctor.
Yeah, like unhappiness is something to fix.
Yeah.
Okay. Ah, nice, because this goes back to this thing, the idea that things can just be fixed. And it's like, instead of just going through that thing and coming out on the other side a better, happier person, you should just fix it, and then you'll
or
never
not
come
coming
out.
Out.
Yeah.
Or staying unhappy or committing suicide.
Yeah.
I mean... And this is where my moral dilemma sits. I'm not denying the individual the right to make themselves happy, even long term on medication, because I strongly believe in the rights of the individuals to do whatever they damn well please.
Right.
But at the same time, we may have a societal problem because of it.
Yeah,
and I have no solutions. I'm not saying that we should ban Prozac. I'm not saying there's. It's a hard problem, and first of all, I'd like to understand whether my hypothesis is right, whether this is really going on, and whether this is really having the political effect that I think it might be having right now.
Yeah.
And so my first sort of inkling is to do study. My first sort of inkling is to motivate people in pharmacology, in political science, in whatever scientific disciplines needed to actually go out and study this damn thing.
And, no, I totally agree because, I mean, I didn't realize that, like, in the Netherlands, because you're talking, it's basically, you, on the one hand, you're defending the right of people to go out and get cured of unhappiness by taking medication, but there's already a societal pressure to do that. So, on the other hand, you have to defend the right of people to be unhappy.
I guess, yeah.
And because, and maybe actually that to provoke anger.
Why would people want to be unhappy? If you can take the red or the blue pill... Mm-hmm. If you have that option of either, if you're unhappy because of the way the world works and it's not your relationship and it's not, I don't know, if the source of your unhappiness is external and societal, and you have the option of either fixing all of society or taking this pill, can we blame people for taking the pill? Because they have to. If they don't do a one and they don't do the other, they'll spend their life in unhappiness. And these are hard problems. Possibly for society, it's better if we don't mass medicate with mood-altering drugs large sections of society.
Yeah.
But then what do you tell the people that you don't medicate?
Well, I have to say, I mean...
Do you tell them, well, that's just tough for you? And how do you distinguish between people that are genuinely psychologically so afflicted that they could never be happy without pills?
Yeah.
And where do you draw that? Because that's an arbitrary threshold.
Well, happiness, I think you have to question the notion of happiness, because actually the pills don't make you happy, they make you less sad.
Yeah,
they don't
but
make
there's,
you happy.
There's psychoactive drugs being prescribed to people that would actually be... that would go psychotic or that would have very clear medical conditions if they didn't take them.
Yeah, but that's different from not being happy or being unhappy.
Yeah, but there's a threshold there.
Yeah.
It's different, but it's not two different worlds with nothing in between.
Yeah.
It's a continuum. And where do you draw that line? Those are political questions.
Yeah.
And we have to realize that they're not pharmacological questions that involve the individual, but they are political questions that involve the collective.
Yeah.
And just getting that realization going, I guess I don't want to formulate answers. I'm just getting that realization going. To me, this is one of the big issues of our time. This is one of the big explanations as to why this society is the way it is. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that you're going to need to understand this time 100 years from now. This development has to be. It's going to be part of this era.
Mm-hmm.
This era is going to be understood by the era where mass medication with mood altering chemicals was first possible and practiced and done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and history will judge us.
History always judges all eras.
Then okay, let's jump into something else. Like, what do you think about like the student strikes? Because there's a new wave of student strikes across Europe, across the world. And I would say what I've loved seeing is that they are angry. And young people seem not to get very angry very often. So I'm so happy to see angry young people out on the streets. I don't think they could do that if they were all medicated into thinking they're happy.
Maybe not. Maybe. But generally, medication happens either earlier because you're too busy in school, or later because you're unhappy for a long time. So maybe that's just the period when people are briefly not medicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're happy to see them out on the streets, or you see some promise there, or
it really differs per movement. Where there's lots of protests in Greece and some other countries, which, in my mind. Deal with the fact that these countries have to be more realistic about their budget. And you can protest all you want, but just the fact that your government could lend money at a ridiculously cheap rate and thus give everybody presents. Yes, you can go protest that now your government all of a sudden doesn't give you presents anymore and you don't have to work till 57 or 59 anymore, but now all of a sudden you have to work till past 60. Sure, that's a reason to protest, but it's not going to go anywhere. So it really depends what the protest's for and against, whether I think that's part of some kind of new movement that's going to liberate the world, or whether it's just economically motivated protests of disgruntled people, which is still fine. Disgruntled people can protest, and that's fine by me. It's just maybe not part of such a highly spirited sort of new thing.
Okay.
It may well be just the effect of we... Take a little bit of the money, and then people protest a little bit.
Okay. So, well, that's a little bit unoptimistic. But then let's go back into the world of information, rage, and pharmacology. So, like, given that there's a population that's thinking, that's interested, that's engaged, where do you see things going in a way like technologically, but with this social drive? What do you see as the next sort of big challenges, the big areas of interest? Like, I mean, after WikiLeaks, like, I mean, let's take WikiLeaks. At least now there's a kind of public awareness that parts of the internet can be just turned off.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's going to happen now? Like, how is our community or this community going to deal with that?
I'm not sure that's the parts of the internet can be turned off. What we're seeing is that what are we seeing? As I said in the keynote, it's really early to tell what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really early to tell where these developments will lead, what's going on. So for me to say we're seeing this or we're seeing that, it's just too early.
Mm-hmm.
I think mostly governments are realizing, a few things we can say. Governments are realizing there's a problem with having large quantities of information and having huge numbers of people access these large quantities of information. And every government in the world is wondering, how can we make sure this doesn't happen to us, or how do we mitigate this? And I think those are big developments. And I think sort of the the early responses to what's going on with WikiLeaks, I'm not sure they're all that consequential. Mm-hmm. Yes, so PayPal doesn't do payments anymore. Well, that's not going to stop people that want to donate, and it's not going to stop. I don't think that, that's all that significant.
Mm-hmm.
There will be attempts to increase control, but there will also be more people understanding that this control is affecting them.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to increase control on the internet 15 years ago, it would have been a much harder sell to convince people that this affected them to quite the same degree that it is today. So,
okay.
I guess.
Good. I think we're gonna bring it to a close then. Thanks. Danke,
yes.
Danke, well.
Graag gedaan.